Welcome to the Archives of Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. For the Halloween edition of Radio Curious in 1997, our program reviewed how miserably sick you can get and perhaps die, puking your guts out on the way to a wretched demise. To do just that, we spoke with Nicoles Fox, a journalist from Maine who wrote a terribly scary book called Spoiled, The Dangerous Truth About a Food Chain That Has Gone Wild. It's truly disgusting. All those little microbes that will make you wretch and cause you to die. The food you prepare at home can poison you. When you eat at a restaurant, the food they serve you can make you puke. I spoke with Nicoles Fox from her home on the Maine coast and asked her to tell us about her book, Spoiled.
Well, we've changed everything about our relationship to food. We've changed what we eat, where we eat, how we eat it, how we produce it, how we process it, and how we distribute it. For instance, not many people are aware of a bacterium called Campylobacter. It's only just now getting a bit of attention, and yet it's been identified as a source of human illness now for about 20 years. It's now the most common cause of foodborne disease in the United States, and one of the main reasons that it's on poultry is because we have actually selected for it in the way we raise poultry.
This is called Campylobacter, and it's on poultry.
Campylobacter is on basically all the poultry we get.
What is it? How does it get there?
Well, it's a bacterium that actually loves birds because it likes the temperature of birds. When it gets into an environment, it can spread quickly, but it spreads most quickly because we raise so many birds so closely together in a confined environment, and they are also from a single breeding stock, so that means that they are susceptible to disease in the same way.
They're genetically alike.
That's right. And so when Campylobacter gets into this environment, it can spread rapidly through an entire flock overnight. And once it does, it's almost impossible to eradicate it. But we give antibiotics to most poultry raised in this country. And one of the antibiotics is called bacitracin, which the poultry rearers would say that they give to prevent illness. In fact, it also helps chickens to grow, and it also actually selects for Campylobacter.
So it's a growth hormone as well?
No. Some years ago, a number of years ago, probably 50 or so, it was discovered that giving animals antibiotics helped them to grow faster. And of course, that's what every producer of food animals wants to do, because if an animal grows faster, then you have to give it less feed, less shelter, less water, whatever. So it's economically more satisfying for the producer. So anything that can help an animal to grow faster is obviously, from the producer's standpoint, very valuable.
But does Campylobacter do to us?
Campylobacter causes a diarrheal disease, and it can last from 3 days to about a week. It can be extremely painful. It can cause bloody diarrhea. It can be very debilitating. And perhaps most importantly, it can move on into other illnesses. Perhaps you've heard of Guillain-Barré syndrome, Reiter's syndrome, reactive arthritis, even meningitis, and on occasion, a human miscarriage. All of these have been related to infections with Campylobacter.
That we get from eating chicken.
And it's on virtually all of our poultry, all of our chickens and turkeys.
So what can we do about this?
Well, this is a bacterium that can be cooked out of meat. In fact, most of the foodborne pathogens that we're looking at are easily destroyed by heat. The problem is cross-contaminating other things in the kitchen.
What do you mean by that?
I beg your pardon?
What do you mean by cross-contaminating other things in the kitchen?
Well, suppose you prepare chicken and you then have Campylobacter on your hands and you go directly to cutting up the lettuce for salad. And you're going to eat that salad without cooking, obviously. You've just contaminated it with a bacterium. Or suppose that you cut the chicken on a cutting board and you wash your hands, but you later go back and cut the salad on that same cutting board. You've cross-contaminated. And so when you eat that salad, you may get sick. But on the other hand, what happens most often in studies that they look at, it's the cook who gets sick from Campylobacter because he or she has handled the raw poultry and is perhaps infected herself or himself.
In other words, by putting your finger in your mouth.
Exactly.
So basically, the Campylobacter factor is a lack of cooking or a lack of cleaning.
That's right.
Will warm soap and water clean it?
Well, yes, and hot water will kill it, and soap. And you want to wash your cutting board in hot soapy water and let it air dry. That's so if there are any bacteria in the water that's still on the board, you're not going to put them on your kitchen towel. You want to wash your hands thoroughly in hot soapy water. And if you want to use a disinfectant on the counter, there's a simple one. You can just put a couple of teaspoons of chlorine bleach in a quart of water, and that will kill bacteria.
So this comes into most every home by eating chicken. How about red meat or vegetarian issues?
Well, red meat can carry a number of pathogens. Salmonella, the most notorious E. coli 015787, which is what made over 700 people ill in the Jack in the Box outbreak. It was in Odwalla apple juice. It was in the Hudson meat that was recalled. And tragically, it's recently been found on salad mix with using of baby greens.
What is this E. coli bacteria?
Well, E. coli is one of the most common bacteria in the world. It's everywhere. It's in all of our guts. It's in the guts of animals. And it's usually harmless or at least not particularly harmful. But this one strain has picked up the ability to produce this very dangerous toxin, and it can also adhere to the lining of the intestine, and that combination makes it a very vicious bug that causes often bloody diarrhea, and in susceptible individuals can move on into hemolytic uremic syndrome.
What is that?
It's a terrible, terrible disease in which the blood cells in the begin to be broken apart by the toxin, and they begin to clog up the urinary tract and the kidneys, and then it can kind of cascade through the body, affecting one organ after another. Some of the children who've died from this have had gangrenous brains. They've had heart attacks. It's not always children, but those people at the extremes of age, the very young and the very old, people who are immune compromised, they're the most vulnerable. In Scotland, there was about a year and a half ago, there was an outbreak of E. coli 015787, in which eventually 21 older adults died.
Well, you're talking about some pretty awful things, gangrenous brains,
right.
Heart attacks. Where does this come from in the E. coli? The other way, how would a person get food that is contaminated with E. coli?
What we're talking about is animal waste or human waste, fecal material. That's why it's always been so important to have clean water supplies and keep waste away from our supply of water. But whenever there's this contamination, whether it's on meat or on vegetables, it can carry these dangerous bugs. And there's a whole list of new bugs that we're looking at, from the common ones of salmonella to new varieties of salmonella that are appearing more frequently, such as Salmonella enteritidis, to the Campylobacter, the Cryptosporidium, to Listeria, Yersinia. There's just a whole list, Cyclospora on raspberries, and we're seeing more and more foodborne disease.
What I'd like you to tell us, Nicole, if you could, is where these show up on the common foods that we eat and how to avoid it.
Well, they show up on anything that has possibly come in contact with animal waste. So what happens in the slaughter process is Perhaps the animal has waste on its hide from being in dirty conditions, and this might get on to the meat during slaughtering. If it's a dairy cow, believe it or not, even the milk in the udders might be contaminated because many cows are infected with bacteria today. It might be from the intestine of the animal breaking and splattering the meat. There are many sources of fecal contamination that can get on meat during the slaughtering process, and that's why slaughtering has to be done so carefully. Today, however, it's done so fast, there may be as many as 250 animals an hour being slaughtered, and you can see that there's more danger of contamination. But the real problem comes with hamburger when I think most people believe that you go to your local butcher store and you ask for hamburger and it's ground up there. Well, it may be ground up there, but it probably comes into them coarse ground from someplace like Iowa or Nebraska or Colorado, and it's ground up there in enormous lots. It may contain 1,000 different cows from 4 different countries, many of them spent dairy cattle. And when all these animals meet at these huge grinders, you've got to expect trouble. One contaminated animal, because the meat is all mixed together in this process, can contaminate 16 tons of hamburger meat.
So this is what we were reading about recently with the contaminated meat from the Midwest?
That's right. That's exactly what happened there, and they made matters worse by taking leftover meat at the end of the day's production and reworking it back into the next day's production, which, of course, just carried bacteria into the next lot.
Is there any way to be safe when a person eats red meat or hamburger?
A thorough cooking of hamburger is important. The good news about steak is that muscle meat is actually sterile, and so the potential for fecal contamination is only on the outside of the meat. So if you take a steak and you don't poke it, you don't skewer it, you don't jab it with a fork to marinate it, you can be sure that what's on the inside is actually microbially sterile. So you, by cooking it on the outside, you'd kill the pathogens, and then you could eat it rare or pink inside. But not hamburger. That would be Russian roulette to do that.
I'd like to take a moment and say that I'm talking with Nicole Fox, who lives on the coast of Maine. She wrote a startling book entitled Spoiled, The Dangerous Truth About a Food Chain Gone Haywire. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Nicole's, there's been a tremendous demand in our country and in other countries for cheap food, something that you can get quickly as fast food or something that's inexpensive to prepare at home. Has this played a role in these foodborne diseases?
Absolutely. I think when I looked into this problem of the increasing problem in foodborne disease, I wanted there to be one simple answer. I think that's what we all look for. In fact, it's very, very complex, and it involves consumer demands as well. We can't just look at the production, processing, and distribution system. We have to look at the role that consumers have played in their demands for novelty, for convenience, for year-round availability, and perhaps most of all, for cheap. And when something is dirt cheap, it's probably dirty. I think a lot of people go into the grocery store and they look at chicken for 99 cents a pound and at a yellow pepper for $3.99 a pound, and it never occurs to them to wonder how an animal can be raised for 6.5 weeks, processed, slaughtered, distributed, and still be so cheap. And what has gone into creating the kind of efficient system that has made that animal cheap
has
also presented it with the potential to be carrying these pathogenic organisms.
So what has gone into it is what?
Well, just some of the things that I mentioned before, the fact that animals are the poultry, the chickens are raised in houses with perhaps 70,000 under one roof, that they're virtually genetically identical. They may be getting dirty feed. They may be getting dirty water. In the United States especially, the chicken houses are not clean between each flock, which always surprises Europeans when they come here. And so you have the potential for the bacteria in one flock of chicken to be very neatly transferred to the next flock. There doesn't seem to be any impetus for the producers to get these bacteria out of these animals because they're not hurting the animals. They're just hurting us. And so if we're going to change things, we really need to awaken consumers so that they can pressure the people who are selling them and then the people who are producing food for them. Let me give you an example. When consumers in Sweden found out how contaminated their poultry was, they simply stopped buying it. And the industry responded. After a 40% drop in consumption of poultry, the industry began figuring out how to produce clean poultry. And you can now buy a salmonella-free chicken in Scandinavia. Now, this is something that we don't have the option of doing here, probably because consumers do not know how contaminated they are and do not know that they can actually be cleaner if they demand it.
Beyond cooking the chicken so that the juices run clear instead
right.
of pink, what can we do to protect ourselves?
That's about it. That's all you can do, really. But you want to make certain that you keep a very clean kitchen and that you're very careful not to transfer the bacteria around. I simply find this too difficult to do, so I don't bring meat into the house anymore. A University of Arizona study compared kitchens to bathrooms and actually found kitchens more contaminated with pathogenic bacteria than the rim of the toilet. And that's, of course, because you're not washing your chicken in your toilet. Chickens are grossly contaminated. There's no other word for it.
So you're suggesting for people who like to eat meat, do not eat chicken and do not eat hamburger, as well as if you do, keep it very clean.
Well, yes. I mean, I think this is an individual decision to make, and this is just my own personal decision. These products, if you bring a piece of raw meat into your kitchen, regardless of what it is, you must treat it as if it were grossly contaminated, because it probably is. So you do need to be careful.
Okay.
Some people say, well, if this is the case, why isn't everybody sick all the time? Well, one expert, the CDC, estimates that we have, each and every one of us has at least one case of foodborne disease a year. We might pass it off as the flu. It might be mild. It might be what they call self-resolving. Or you might be one of the unlucky ones, and I have so many stories to tell, for whom it was really quite a disastrous experience.
Where a person thought he or she had the flu, and in fact it was a foodborne disease.
Right. In fact, there is no such thing as intestinal flu. Flu is a respiratory disease. So if you've had something that you call the flu, it was most likely a foodborne disease.
In other words, vomiting and diarrhea is not the flu.
That's right.
Interesting. Well,
it's a respiratory disease. It's something in your lungs. Vomiting and diarrhea are most likely a foodborne disease.
So what do we do about going to a restaurant? How do we know it's safe?
Well, you don't. Basically, you're putting your health in the hands of strangers. It's really an act of trust.
Then what do you order when you go to a restaurant?
Well, you know, if you order something thoroughly cooked, you're going to be fine. But, you know, if you get something that should be thoroughly cooked, such as, say, a lasagna, and you bite into it and it has a cool spot in it because they've heated it up in a microwave oven that doesn't cook evenly, send it back and ask that it be heated. You also want to basically go to restaurants that you trust. And even that can be wildly misplaced. Even amongst restaurants where I know the owners, I've found some terrible practices going on, such as pooling eggs. You know, any egg that you eat today potentially carries Salmonella enteritidus.
So explain what you mean when you say pooling eggs.
Pooling eggs is when in a restaurant situation, the chef may, before breakfast, break 150, 200 eggs into a large bowl and beat them up together and use those for preparing scrambled eggs or omelets or whatever.
So one contaminated egg, or that's contaminated with salmonella, will spoil the whole batch.
Spoil the whole batch, yes. The difference is that if they'd used individual eggs, broken one by one, perhaps one person or perhaps two people might have gotten sick. If you use pooled eggs, you might make 100 people sick.
Plastic wrapping around food, what does that do for us? That we don't
well,
want.
It gives us a sense of reassurance that everything is very nicely protected inside. But if, in fact, the bacteria is already on the product, it just keeps the bacteria inside with the product. It really is a kind of false assurance of safety and cleanliness. It really doesn't mean a heck of a lot, and in some situations it can actually create a situation that's favorable to certain kind of microbes. For instance, a lot of us like the convenience of opening up a bag of pre-cut vegetables or salad, and we may not ask ourselves why it is that those vegetables seem to stay fresh so long, even after they've been cut up. It may be because they're in what's called a modified atmospheric packaging, in which the oxygen has been taken out and replaced with some other gas, perhaps nitrogen. Now, in that case, the spoilage bacteria, which make the, say, the lettuce turn brown around the edges, don't grow as easily because there's no oxygen. But if that package happened to be contaminated with Yersinia or Listeria, which are pathogens that grow without oxygen, they would be very happy there, but you wouldn't see the spoilage that would put you off not eating them. And so this is a new danger, and the people who deal in foodborne disease are just waiting for the outbreaks to happen. If, in fact, Listeria or Yersinia or another one, Clostridium botulinum, get into these packages of pre-cut vegetables.
Nichols, what prompted you to write this book?
Well, I'm just a reporter, and I do stories on a lot of different subjects. I write for The Economist magazine in London, and it was in 1993, and I, like everyone else, had heard about the Jack in the Box outbreak in the Western states, and I was mightily impressed, but I thought it was something that just happened there, a kind of an anomaly. And then we had an outbreak here in Maine, and two children died, and I'm sure no one heard of it. It wasn't one that made the press, but nevertheless it happened, and I became interested in this bug. I've discovered it was a new pathogen. I was intrigued as to what new meant, because I didn't really understand how a bug could get into the food supply so quickly, and I discovered it was really spreading around the globe. This led me to look more closely at E. coli 015787, and then I found out that foodborne disease was on the increase. We had all these emerging foodborne pathogens, and in fact, this was a fascinating story to tell of how changes in how we do things, our relationship to food, how we eat, how we cook foods, also how we raise them, how we process them and distribute them, all of those things could create these niches for a host of emerging foodborne pathogens.
When you made reference to salad that's prepackaged, makes me wonder about switching to organic foods or vegetarianism as a safer approach.
Well, none of those are guarantees. Organic foods may be, they may taste better, they may be better for you, they may have more trace minerals in them, but they still may have the same danger of carrying microbes. Vegetarianism is no guarantee because fruits and vegetables can carry microbes as well. What they are irrigated with, what they are sprayed with, what they are washed with, how they are picked, all of these things can contaminate them with microbes that cause disease. We have to remember that when you eat foods that are imported from far away, you are in effect consuming the growing conditions in that environment, the water, the soil. You are consuming the living and working and sanitation conditions of the people who pick your produce and pack it. So one of the things that I do think is that if you can lower the number of times that a product changes hands, you're going to be better off. And to me, that means looking for more locally grown foods, looking for foods that haven't traveled such a distance, foods that are in season, really, that haven't been stored quite as long. And one of the added advantages is that if you begin buying, say, from a local farmer's market, you begin to build up a relationship with the person that provides you with your food. And that relationship can mean responsibility and accountability. And I believe that translates into safer food.
Processed foods, is there a future in eating more of those, such as they may be?
Well, there really is, in a sense, but it's not something I like to contemplate because I love food, I love cooking, And to me, that's just one more layer of technology separating us from the source of our food. And yet people will say, oh, yes, we can eat canned foods, we can eat processed packaged foods, we can eat irradiated foods, and we'll be safer. We will also be setting the stage to create bugs that resist these processes. For instance, you can bet that once we begin irradiating, we will soon be creating irradiation-resistant microbes. It's also what a doctor up in Canada that I like to quote calls the bulldozer approach or the Stalinist approach to food safety, whereby we're just further and further separated from the source of our food by layers of corporations and technologies. And really, we lose control over our whole food source. You know, you can go into your grocery store and find 10 varieties of orange juice, but if they're all processed, pasteurized orange juice, that's really not any kind of choice. That's
it's one variety.
I beg your pardon?
It's one variety.
I mean, there may be 10 different brands, but they're all exactly the same.
Thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious. And before we close, I'd like to ask you the question that I ask all of our guests at the end of an interview, and that is, could you please tell us about an interesting book that you've read lately?
Well, yes, I've read a wonderful book called Water by Alice Outwater, which it's just a funny coincidence that her name is about water as well, but it explains so much to me about the problems that we're having with water and why we're having them. And obviously, water's interesting to me because when water touches food, it has the potential to contaminate.
Nicole Fox, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious.
Thank you.
Nicole Fox is the author of Spoiled, The Dangerous Truth About a Food Chain That Has Gone Wild. The book that she recommends is Water by Alice Atwater. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. They're also available in CD format for $10 each. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your thoughts and ideas about our programming and enjoy hearing from you. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's U-K-I-A-H, California, 95482. The phone is 707-462-6541. Our email address is curious@radiocurious.org. You've been listening to the archives of Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.